Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respects to the elders, past and present, and the Aboriginal elders of other communities who may be listening today. Welcome to The Gays Revolting, your definitive weekly news source for contemporary gays.
We put the G in LGBTQIA+, and we're here to help you be the best G you can be.
Subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Gays Revolting. And welcome back, everyone.
Hey. Hello. Hey.
Today you are joined by our regular host.
Who are they?
We have the fantastic Luke, queen of the ping pong ball people.
Yes.
Thomas, our trivia hostess with the mostest. And Kyle with a beautiful jawline that's sharper than a knife.
Yay! Oh my god, it was nice. I'm not used to this. I love Mikey.
And then of Mikey. Course Mikey as well. Mikey's intro is always the sweetest.
Yeah.
It's lovely.
We are assholes. Mikey's too pure for this.
Mikey's reads are compliments.
Yeah. It's like, how dare you say something nice about me when I wasn't expecting it.
How's everybody's week been?
Really good.
Very good. It's Melbourne Fringe Festival season. Yeah. So I've been to see a lot of experimental performance art.
I wonder why you got bangs.
Some of it's been amazing. Mm-hmm. Some of it has made me want to cut all funding to the arts and give it to sports. That's the great thing about a Fringe Festival.
Yeah, I love Melbourne Fringe. It's like a Kinder Surprise. You never know if a show's going to be amazing or make you want to die.
Yeah. The great thing is that whatever it is, you know that that person has poured their heart and soul into it. And sometimes it's quite fun seeing a shit show because you're like, gee, you worked.
Your soul is really shitty.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
One time, an ex of mine took me to see, I think, a live 8-hour performance of Angels in America. And it was so dry, someone actually fainted and had to be taken out.
8 hours is only the first half, isn't it?
8 hours.
It was like two shows. You would go there.
Yeah, it was the first 8 hours.
And then another eight hours.
Yeah, look, that's an incredible show when it's done well, but I imagine seeing a not very well done production of it would be
in
even
a Melbourne
more painful
basement
than the original show.
Yeah. Theatre, yes. Guys.
Oh, we're such cultured queens.
So much culture. You guys might not know, but Eminem's still alive. He's just released like a new album, and lo and behold, he has been offensive, he has dropped the F-bomb, and I'm not talking about fuck. He has said the worst F-bomb to me anyway.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say it because I don't like it. Bon Iver is also on the track and he's distanced himself from it because he was against it.
I'm going to say the word just for our listeners that might
not. Okay, say it.
I've heard it a million times said it to me. Faggot!
So aggressive with such conviction.
Yeah.
I don't like that word. I guess we can like talk about what you guys think as well. But it's not just a me show. I guess you have opinions, I guess. Troyce Vaughan and stuff, another fellow Australian South African, he's slightly more famous.
Than you or Eminem?
Than me. He has commented on it saying that like not all words are for everybody, which I totally agree with.
Yes.
Eminem is notorious, like heaps of songs in the past he said this word.
So in a lot of ways, it's not a shocking shock.
Hashtag
it's
shocking
more
shock.
Just a shocking shock that no one's learned their lesson by 2018. But
yeah, 2018, can we like get with it, please? Like you had one shot.
It's just, it's not okay to say in like lyrics at all if you're not a gay person, if you're not reclaiming the word.
I have heard people, like I've listened to other gay podcasts and stuff, and they refer to each other in this way. Yeah. It always jars me. I always just get like a...
Yeah, I don't use faggot in a matey term. It's not in my vocabulary, but I have friends that do, and I'm not jarred by it when it is a gay friend
it's always
using that word. Yeah. That's fine. I definitely use "you silly old poof."
I call my brother giant homo all the time.
Yeah. So it's sort of the same as...
I just feel like that one's really aggressive.
For you it is. But yeah, like I sort of get it when other gays do, but I definitely am not okay with people that aren't gay using it.
Oh, totally, yeah.
Do you know, I very rarely have something to say on this podcast. I often have something to say on this podcast.
You're so quiet.
But I rarely have something to say about pop culture stuff because I am so back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Whenever I think of Eminem, this one very strong memory comes to mind for me. So when I was in high school, was when life was black and white.
It's a classic gag.
Fuck your mouth while you sleep. I was in like year 7, 8 was when Eminem was getting huge, and I was trying to fit in so desperately, and I had made my mum buy me like baggy pants and all these like white rapper kind of clothes just to try and fit in. And the movie 8 Mile came out, and like all my friends were so excited, and I went with my mates pretending that I loved Eminem. In the lead up to this, it was already in 2001, a lot of controversy about him being really homophobic because he kept using the word faggot and stuff. So in the build up to this, he had tried to fix his image a bit. Mm. And so in the movie, there's this like small little scene where some guy is getting like verbally abused and it's about to be a punch on, and the guy that's getting abused is gay, and Eminem stands up for him by saying to the guy that's abusing him, "Fucking homo, little maggot, Paul is gay, but you are the faggot."
Wait, and so it's he like, called it's the like, non-gay guy a faggot?
Yeah. So he's sort of saying like, "Oh, no, having sex with another man is fine, but any gay acting is what I have a problem with." Oh. And I remember watching that and being like, "Oh, okay, cool. So I just can't be a faggot. Like, I just can't be camp and act gay and that sort of stuff. That's what I'm allowed to do." And the other thing I always think about with this, and it was from around about the same time, his relationship with Elton John.
I was going to bring up Elton John's
my mind.
He's defended him a few times.
Yes.
I didn't even know that they were parents.
Elton John is quite forward with his activism usually, but in this respect, I feel like he's wrong.
Yeah, the word faggot is so powerful, and I've actually talked to my friends a lot about it and thought about it a lot because there is this push to reclaim words, and we've seen it in other minority groups where it's become a real thing that brings the community together. I feel
like rappers.
Yeah, like puppets. Yes.
Funny enough.
All the white rappers are really sticking together on this one.
The reclaiming of faggot has just not worked. Mm. And I've seen a few social attempts to do it and a few groups that have pushed. I kind of think that the reason why these attempts to reclaim the word haven't quite stuck and haven't worked is, one, we're still way too close to it, and two, we don't have the support of the majority saying this word is not okay in a blanket kind of way.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Do you know what
I
mean?
So it's people like Eminem that are keeping it okay to use
exactly
the word.
Yeah. It's not like the end of the world to use the word faggot in popular culture. Mm-hmm. Funnily enough, like complimentary to what you said, is faggot doesn't faze me at all, but Poofda does.
Oh, really?
Poofda? No, I'm like really jarring. Really? It's really? Maybe it's because it's like got such a bogan connotations or something, and that's the group that really made my life shit when I was younger. Okay. Yeah. Poofda, I have way stronger feelings towards
that. Exactly. I feel like that's, for me, that's so inoffensive. I feel nothing for that.
Like,
is Poofda kind of like Australian?
It's very Australian.
Yeah, because I was like, maybe that's why, because I never grew up with that. Yeah. But I was weirdly thinking today, I was thinking of a South African slang term for gay people, which is a moffie, which is like, that means like, you're like, oh, he's such a moffie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, mine was never faggot. It was always fag. Yeah. All throughout primary school, it was just like, you're a fag. It wasn't until I made friends in sort of the last 12 months with a group of new people that they use it in a positive way within themselves, and the first time I heard it, they were just like, "Oh, hey faggot, how's it going?" And I was just like,
"That's like, so like
really like, like." I was like, "Oh, like is that okay to say?" But then, like, the more I've been around it, the more I'm just like, "Oh, okay, Lynn, like it's my gay friends saying it, like it's fine." But like, it's still every time I hear
so
it,
like, because I'm gonna say, do you have any other words that you don't feel?
No, like everything, like homo, fine. I'm fine. Yeah. Like poofda, never been an issue. Yeah. Like,
interesting.
Yeah,
for me at primary school and high school, back in the black and white days, when Luke and I,
me and Tom,
genuinely the worst thing was gay. Like, yeah, gay was gay, that's so gay. This is gay.
That's gay.
That's gay. And it was a really commonly used. Mm-hmm. I mean, the faggot would have been used if you were getting the shit beaten out. You know, that was a really
common for you.
Gay, like oh, you're so gay. Was so. It was in Hollywood movie, like American Pie and that sort of stuff. I don't know if it was American Pie specifically, but that sort of genre of movie from that era that were mainstream movies that every 15-year-old was going to see. Gay was such a derogatory term, and so I think that's why I now am so embracing of that term.
Yeah. Have you also had people say to you like, "Oh, that's so gay," like after you've come out? Yeah. And like, oh no, but you know what I mean.
No, yeah, that like pissed me. And you're off. Like, oh,
what?
No,
what do they mean?
Like, oh, no, that's so, like, so gay.
Like straight people are like using it in that term. Like,
seriously,
sort of like part of the like once you've come out to them and stuff, it's sort of like,
and then they're like, "Oh, sorry," like you know what I mean though.
Like, I'm cool with you. I'm allowed to say
the amount of times I've called people out. I'm just like, you can't say that, and they're just like, yeah, but you know what I mean. It's like, yeah, but
a lot of other words you could use.
Like the guy over there that might be gay doesn't know what you mean. Like it's not what your intent is, it's how you affect everyone else. Like,
I love reversing it at work sometimes. I'll just be in my office and be like, oh my god, this is so gay. And people will be like, what happened? I'll be like, I've just balanced everything. Superannuation's done, it's fucking amazing. It's so gay.
Here's a term I'm interested to hear your opinions on: fag hag
or queer deer or fruit fly.
But fag hag specifically.
Fag hag specifically, I'm interested to see what you...
I remember growing up, like, my best girlfriend, like, she referred to herself as a fag hag, and we all called her a fag hag. But then once we came out of school, it was sort of like, nah, let's just not call you that anymore. Like,
yeah, fair.
Because it has that negative connotation to it.
You guys,
I've had straight friends who are like, do not call me that. Like, I will not be. She's like, because it just comes with a whole kind of image of, like, a... I think my understanding is, like, a desperate kind of, like, older, like, maybe woman who just surrounds herself with a whole gay community. Like,
yeah, I think there's some outdated misogyny in the term. I've never had a fag hag. I've never had a fag hag experience to relate to. But knowing the women that I know, any sort of phrase to describe them that was coined from outside the female community is generally not a good... Because if we're talking about the name itself as opposed to the culture around
it... Are we talking about the hag part or the fag part? Or when it's joined together?
Yeah, I think the hag part and the connotations that come with that are not particularly flattering to the women.
It's not like a beautiful...
It's interesting because I know that it's not generally an accepted term, so I would never just meet a woman at a bar and say, oh, be my fag hag, you know? But when I was going through the coming out process and I came out to some of my close girlfriends who were very popular at school and that sort of thing, they embraced the term. And I think what made me feel good about it and why we have still used the term when talking to each other is they were putting themselves down, being like, well, he's with me, and if he's a fag, I'm the hag. And it was sort of like this way of us putting ourselves together in a weird way.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It's been the...
But I do get why it's not a socially generally acceptable term to use.
Things were also in black and white back then.
It was. Enid Blyton had just released her second novel. It was exciting.
Yeah. This sounds really stupid when I say it out loud, but it's something...
I mean, most things do.
Thank you, Kyle.
You're welcome.
But it's something I think about all the time. I've started to see it pop up online and in my newsfeed a lot, and it's this really, forgive me, dumb-sounding question of, am I gay enough? It's something I've thought about a lot when I was coming out and finding my space within the community. There's quite a public image of what it is to be gay, which isn't necessarily created by us to like begin with, like stereotypes, etc. People are judgmental just by nature and clicky and things like that. So I've been told a lot of times throughout my life that I wasn't necessarily gay enough because I didn't know the Sondheim playbook, for example, or...
You should just show them your photo gallery in your phone.
Exactly. And that was always my argument, is like, I suck enough dick.
Yeah.
What else do I need to do?
Like, I think that's pretty gay.
What actually makes me gay? And the difference between being a part of the scene,
which is really interesting, and it's the first thing I thought of when you said, am I gay enough? Because the things that you describe as being gay enough are not the things that I think of when you ask the question. Like, you're talking about, like, do I know enough Sondheim stuff?
Yeah.
And for me, like, I love my fucking musicals, and I'm at the gay bars all the time and that sort of shit, and I love going to drag shows and that stuff. But what I don't feel I'm good at doing as a gay or gay enough at is my social media stuff and online stuff, being quirky enough on my ironic Instagram stories or whatever.
Exactly.
You know?
That's what's so interesting about this, is like, there are new ways that people are feeling excluded from the gay community. It's like we keep figuring out new ways. Yeah.
What else can we
to
do?
Make ourselves feel bad? But the online part of this discussion is a really big part of it.
It is. Yeah. And I didn't realize until doing this podcast and learning from you guys how much of the community is not in the physical space.
No.
And is so only online. And from the lovely messages we've been receiving from people in rural areas as well as inner city gays.
But like, I know what you mean, like when you say like, am I gay enough? Because like, it wasn't until I moved to the city that like, I sort of felt gay enough. And like, because I hadn't ever really surrounded myself with gay people. Like where I lived, it was all straight people. There were like my few gay friends in high school, but like we're all sort of just like trying to fit in with everybody else. And then when it was like I moved to the city, it was just like, oh fuck, do I have to look this way? Do I have to act this way? Like my social media is not like all these other gay people. Like, yeah, it was really daunting. Because when I first moved to the city, it was just me hanging out with my skate friends and we were doing our thing. And it was, I made a few.
Did you say skate friends?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you a skater?
I am a skater,
You still skate, like skateboard?
So skateboard, I'm a sponsored roller skater.
Did you not read his bio?
I genuinely...
Piece of shit.
Have we talked about this on the podcast?
Yeah, no, we haven't. Like, I...
Oh my God, Mikey, I want to see you skate. That's so cute.
He was a skater boy.
I used to referee roller derby and I skate in skate parks. And
you should do like the first ever skateboard drag show.
Oh, a drag queen skater. That'd be the coolest part ever.
Yeah, that'd be
sick.
Can
we start a YouTube channel?
Yeah, let's do it.
Donate to our PayPal. Wow.
But sorry, yeah,
I didn't know that about you. That's
so like,
amazing.
I just hung out with my skate friends and that was it. And then I started making gay friends in my area where I lived because it was just like, let's get on Grindr. Let's like hook up with people, whatever. And actually made friends. And then sort of they took me out to the gay bars. And it was just like, oh, there's this whole other side that I had no idea about. And it was just because I've been so introverted a lot of my life that it was just like, oh, let's see where this takes me. And that sort of led me into like doing drag and embracing my feminine side and like really embracing my gayness and being like, I can be both. I don't have to be one or the other. Like,
you can be the first skating drag queen.
Yeah, that's it.
That'd be so cool.
The Grindr thing that you bring up is interesting, and I think that's what's really separated the community a lot, and perhaps why we were closer prior to it. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing, because it's obviously giving access to a lot of people that can't go into the physical space for whatever reason, the ability to communicate with other gay people. But I do feel like there's two Facebook groups that I'm obsessed with, Lost Gay Sydney and Lost Gay Melbourne. I don't know if highly recommend joining it. If you are under the age of 50 or so and didn't live in either of those areas, you're welcome to join it, but not post. It's
okay.
It's for people from, I'd say, or people that were active on the gay scene from 1990 prior to rejoin, post memories, post photos, that sort of thing.
Oh,
and
cool.
It is fucking beautiful. It is so lovely. And when I look at these photos, I look at those photos from the scene and it was way more inclusive than now. There was blurred lines between trans and drag and no one really gave a fuck about it. And
absolutely.
And for a lot of people, drag was, for trans people at the time, it was a way of expressing how they felt in a way that they could still live a life that was socially acceptable. Racially, it was a lot more diverse. There was so much more Indigenous drag performers in Melbourne back then than there are now, which I think is a huge shame and that sort of stuff. But I feel like now we've got these, oh, this is a space where this kind of gay goes and this is a space where this kind of gay goes. And we've also got this online thing, which is separating us even further. And yeah, it makes me a little bit sad.
For me, it's not, I guess, always been the question of, am I gay enough? But like growing up and stuff, like, am I too gay? Like, I need to like control this kind of thing.
Yeah, right.
And then obviously, like, I mean, as I'm growing older, like I'm getting way more comfortable with myself and everything. But I do compare myself to a lot of people in the way that like, oh, I don't know musicals and things like that. And my interests lie in different areas, like video games and comic books and things. Sometimes I'm like, oh, like I'm not like the sure diehard fan. Like, am I gay enough? Yeah, no, being here and everything, like just being like around different people and being around you guys, learning to embrace yourself.
Yeah, it's funny that you guys have brought up musicals and sharing that sort of
stuff.
Yeah,
like you have this very stereotypical
idea.
Mike and
I think both have that. Yeah. We enjoy that kind of culture. And I think the reason I embrace it so much is because I wasn't allowed to talk about it for
so
long.
Yeah.
So that's my rebellion against pop culture. And I've said many times before, I don't really engage with current pop culture that much anymore because that was the thing that I wasn't allowed to enjoy when I was younger, was like these 60s and 70s old albums that my grandma would play for me. But I don't think you should feel like you're not gay enough for not embracing that. Just accept that for the gay men that do, it's because they now can and probably couldn't.
Yeah. I mean, like, my brother's always kind of just been my role model. He's like my older brother, like gay brother.
He's my
like
calendar model for me. But
okay. And I've always kind of modeled myself of him in a way that, like, when I turned 18 and everything, he took me to my first gay club and everything like that. So I think I was very fortunate to have that kind of different experience.
Yeah, I'm really envious of you guys.
Yeah, so that's always been really cool, and I have a really good relationship with him.
Mm.
It's interesting we keep bringing up musicals, because that was something a group of gay men were actually very derogatory and, like, put me down about when I first came out in the scene. And it took me a while to realize that that wasn't indicative of the gay community. That was indicative of people being mean.
Yeah.
Which happens across all different cultures.
And what that little group of men are doing, just to very quickly interrupt, is they're probably so used to hearing, oh, you haven't seen the last Fast and Furious movie or whatever straight people watch, I don't know.
Yeah,
but that's like that's their space where they can be like, oh, I'm going to do that, but about what I know kind of thing, which doesn't make it okay.
Yeah.
But that, you're right, that's what human beings, unfortunately, some human beings do.
Yeah. The reason why I think about it a lot is it's time for the mental health hour.
Get out your notes.
I myself have struggled with social anxiety for years. Yeah. Like, it was killing me. It was the biggest hurdle I had to hop over. I couldn't fathom the idea of being in a group of people I didn't know.
Yeah.
I couldn't fathom going out into an environment where I wasn't in control of every single aspect. And when you look into the figures and you go, well, the rates of depression, anxiety in our community are double that of the normal. There are a lot of people in our community with social anxiety.
Mm.
And it's such an imprisoning anxiety. It's something that takes over almost all aspects of your life, and it's very hard to shake.
Mm.
It takes a lot of work. I have a lot of...
It takes a long time.
A lot of time, a lot of failure as well. Mm. It takes a lot of going out and failing at it and feeling awful to get over it or to get better at managing it. And for me and my experiences in being a part of quote-unquote the scene was that I wasn't fully in control of my social anxiety, and that was not an environment that I could feel comfortable in.
Mm-hmm.
Not because of the musicals and not because of the content, but because of being around other people.
Yeah.
In that sense, I'm really happy that we do have active online communities, especially, you know, our Facebook group. People have started posted some really lovely stuff in there.
Oh, it's
really sharing and talking to each other, and the gamer community.
I joined that on Facebook. Like,
it's for people that have different interests that maybe have some barriers to being out and in the scene, can also be a part of the community. To counteract that too, from doing this show and from working on my social anxiety and being out and about, I've seen how much life that gives.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And how, you know, I live my best life when I'm out and six bottles deep. You know what I mean? Like, I can see both sides and go, oh, this really makes sense to me, but I couldn't have done one without the other. And
I think it's interesting to, like, see what people consider the scene to be, like, because it's different interpretations.
Absolutely. That is something I'm learning.
Like, for me, I consider the scene people who are, like, out at the clubs, and then they're the gays who have, like, all the attractive gay friends, and they'll go to, like, brunch with 40 of them. To me, like, that's the scene. Like, all the popular gays, it's like a high school kind of cafeteria or something.
Yeah, the cool gays.
Yeah, totally. And then you just see them on all each other's stories, and they go on holiday and, like, Mykonos together and stuff.
Yeah.
So for me, like, that's the scene. But, like, I know to other people, the scene is completely different.
The interesting thing that I've just realized that we've all touched on is being ostracized from other parts of our community for not having knowledge of something, whether it's pop culture or whatever.
Yeah.
And just to point a fact out, like, Luke and Mikey and I are guilty of that. I'm just thinking, like, we have read Kyle for not having watched Priscilla Queen
all
of the Desert.
All the time, like, on the way here.
In four separate episodes of this.
It comes up.
But it's an interesting thing. And now we're talking about, like, okay, so great. It's great that social media has made a space for gamers to connect and make their little pod.
Yeah.
And for the music theater queens to connect and make the... But what we maybe need to be more conscious of is, while it's great to have your little pod, don't isolate yourselves in that pod.
Yeah.
I personally don't have a problem with a little prod and a jab at each other for not knowing something, but perhaps also being mindful that that person doesn't live in that world that you live in, and, and trying to sort of share information rather than tease each other for not having it. Did we just solve the world?
Yes.
Show's done.
And that's the last ever episode.
So we have a fan submitted.
Oh, these are the
topic,
best. These are my favorite.
Which I love.
Oh my God. It's going to be something gross.
You sick people.
I mean, to some people it's gross. To some people it's amazing.
What is it?
Man's
it's
trash.
Amazing.
It's another man's
A fan submitted sex toys this week.
Sex toys. That's the question, is it?
No, no, no. These not the question. No.
Sex toys.
They sent in us a dildo. No, I'm joking.
Yeah, they submitted a sex toy.
Me personally.
How you living?
Yeah, yeah.
No, I love a good vibrating dildo.
Oh,
yeah.
Now, is it personal use or in
personal use generally? I mean, I have partner played in the past. I'd just rather just have sex.
You've got a spare dick. Why
Yeah, I mean, like, I've got one right here. Like, oh my gosh. No. I'm a big fan of, like, the soft silicon ones.
Which
with, like, a vibrating center.
Does it look like a dick, or is it just like
floppy.
A kind
No,
of
it looks like a dick. It's like just floppy, but it's just
Oh,
like,
and it's got the vibrating coil
Yeah, totally. I remember one time there was this silver daddy that I was hooking up with.
Silver daddy?
Is that like and a silver box?
And it'd been like our third hookup. Oh. We were like halfway through. I was bottoming and he like pulled out, and then all of a sudden I just felt a dildo go straight in me, and I was just like,
Did you know it was there?
No, like I had no idea. And I was
better than
like,
the other way around, I think. That's what it would always be a little
but
bit.
But I was just like, oh, okay, this is happening, whatever. And then it's just like, are you all right? I'm just like, yeah, I'm fine.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And then we finished, and then I never saw it.
Was
again.
That your first toy experience?
Yeah, that was my first toy experience with someone else.
Yeah.
And it was just so unexpected that I was just like, boop, I'm good.
I haven't had a huge amount of toy experience. The first one I do remember, I don't know if I talked about it in this podcast or I talked about it in private with you, like, but when I was like year 7 or 8, my parents had bought me a
Did your parents buy you?
A CD player.
Oh dear God, thank you. Okay.
That had a built-in radio, and I'd stay up late at night listening. And one night I'm like surfing the channels, is that what you call it?
Oh my God.
And found what I now think must have been Joy 94.9, which for anyone outside of inner city Melbourne is an LGBTI Melbourne radio station.
Yeah.
And I worked out that at 9 o'clock at night they had a sex show where they gave tips about sex, and they had a guy talking about putting stuff up your butt, and it never even crossed
my
mind that you could put something inside your butt. Like, it was not even we didn't have the internet back then. So.
Shocking shock.
So I'm like looking around my room for something to stick up my butt. And they didn't tell you what kind of things you should be putting up your butt.
Yeah,
so I was really into arts and crafts at the time, and I had this like craft kit that had paddle pop sticks.
Why, with you and the splintery sounding shit.
Found this, and I didn't know about lube either. They didn't explain that on the show.
Yes, we know don't know about lube. You think animals.
So I stuck a paddle pop stick up my butt, and thank God I didn't get any splinters.
Ow! Oh,
and then really the only other time that I've used toys was one of my ex-boyfriends, and a long time ago, we were both bottoms when we started dating. Mm.
Double dildo?
Yeah, we got a double-ended dildo. I went out and bought us a double-ended dildo, which I thought would be really sexy, but it was really just sort of like, do you remember that cartoon Cat Dog?
Yeah.
That had the cat on one end and the dog on the other end. We basically...
While you were joined together.
We were basically just cat... Like, there was no romance because you couldn't really look at each other with your butts together.
Mm. Oh, wow.
I honestly feel... And I've been drunk and, like, paraded this opinion around a few times.
Yeah.
But I honestly think that dildos are, like, the next crossover into mainstream heterosexual culture. Well, male heterosexual culture.
Oh, I was
culture.
Like,
yeah.
Very mean.
Getting there.
But I constantly pressure, probably not an appropriate way, JB, my heterosexual best friend, to start exploring the wonderful world of his butthole all that happens down there.
What in the
and
butt?
Think dildos, even the smaller little eggs and anal beads and things. And all I literally think needs to happen is someone needs to get whoever does the marketing and design for like Lynx Africa body sprays and get them to start putting tribal tattoo marks all over these big black dildos and selling them to the straight
just
men.
Just writing
or
four
just like
men.
And just adding four men and putting the Collingwood colours all around that dick.
Yeah, the AFL grand final dildo, yeah.
It will cross over, and heterosexual men, the one thing they love more than sex is being able to have sex by themselves without interacting with other people.
And it'd probably be good for society if some of them started doing that.
Well.
Don't they have like flashlights for that now? It's like the male dildo kind of thing.
Yeah, but I think once they discover the joys of butt sex.
Yeah,
that's it.
Totally.
Like, I've got two confirmed straight friends that love being pegged by them.
Oh, yeah.
Pegging.
Yeah,
they're all about it.
And you got them into it?
No. I wish.
Oh.
No.
Wow. Why is it called pegging?
That's actually a really good question.
Why? It's like,
I've imagined, but I don't think that this is correct.
No, tell me.
You know those really old school pegs that had like three prongs?
Oh my God.
Where you put one prong over one side of the...
Yeah, kind of looks like that.
That's what I imagined, but I don't know if that's correct.
Oh, that's so weird.
I don't know.
One time, hi, JB. One time, Jay, oh, this is really embarrassing for him. He texted me and said, like, oh, I don't know what's going on, but something's happening with my butthole.
Well, he texted the expert.
And he texted the expert because a lot of things have happened with my butthole in my 32 years. I said, have you looked at it? Like, what's going on? And he said, no, I haven't looked at it. I said, you have to. It's like a rite of passage. You don't know what you're working with. You could have a beautiful butthole down there.
Yeah.
You need to check it out. And so I Ubered to his house and said, we're doing this. We're looking at your butthole. Tried to find a mirror or something and told him, squat over it, look down. Easy as anything. Oh, I grabbed like some little mirror.
Oh, no.
Said, take this to the fucking bathroom, look at your butthole and tell me what it looks like. And I don't actually think he ended up doing it. He couldn't follow through. And
he's that afraid of his own butthole.
Yeah, straight men. Wow. Very terrified of their own buttholes. But it was lucky that he didn't, because half an hour later his girlfriend came home and I told the story and said, JB's so frightened of his own body, he couldn't look at his butthole in this mirror. And she said, oh my God, that is my like mystic Chinese spirit mirror.
Oh!
That's my spirit.
That is tainted with evil. Oh my God.
Oh.
That is and fucked it, up.
Yeah, almost saw straight into his hole.
I don't really have much experience at all with any sex toys, very vanilla in that way, but I have researched.
Your boyfriend's basically a sex toy.
Well, yeah,
so beautiful.
No, he is. I did some research and holy fuck, there's some weird shit out there. There are zombie themed dicks.
There's dinosaur themed ones.
Oh, there's like alien ones or like metal robot fucking fleshlights and shit. I'm like, who is into this? And then like putting all like, I know we spoke about the guy who put all the hard boiled eggs in his butt. But people are like, that's a whole thing. Like putting rubber eggs in yourself and like laying them.
Laying eggs,
Whoa, this is a bit daunting.
Do you know that Adelaide is the highest sex shop per capita city in Australia?
Perverts.
What? No have you, shit, have that's you, true.
It is true.
Adelaide is true.
First time I was in Adelaide, I was doing a drag show opening for some no-name comedian and had realized I hadn't packed my shoes and had to run to a sex shop to get some man-sized high-heel shoes. And I walked in and they had, just talking about the zombie dick thing, they had, it was really freaky, in a glass coffin, a life-size sex doll of this girl that looked maybe 16 at the most.
Oh,
was like dead with her arms folded and eyes closed, but it was like a fleshy.
So that's for like necrophiliac.
And it was like fucked. it was like four grand or something like that. But it was like it was like a human size.
Have you
real
seen
dolls?
Does it count as a sex toy? Those people who dress in like the full doll latex kind of suits and they are like. Have you seen that?
I'm kind of not into it, but I fucking go them. Like they've started a whole community.
But like so they wear like the whole latexy rubber latex face, and they have everything
the
and they're
dolls,
just like and then it's like
it's in the galaxy of sex toys.
The
sex toy galaxy.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
And we are joined with a special guest, one of the most popular gay comedians in Australia, in fact, if not around the world, and also my best friend, Joel Creasy.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
We're so excited to have you, and it's just me and Luke.
I thought you were introducing me at first.
Fuck off.
This is, I'm hoping my big break.
Yes, yeah, I think it will be.
We'll tag you on social media.
Fabulous.
So let's start off with, you've started hosting a new show, a dating show, Take Me Out.
Yes, it's very highbrow.
Yeah. Not only that, you're the first out and proud gay man hosting a primetime game show, which is like a gold gig here in Australia because we love our game show.
I think you're the first gay man hosting their own show on commercial television.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
When you got that role, did that kind of hit home that this was kind of a landmark?
I didn't realise until someone mentioned it. And also, it's kind of on Channel 7, which I guess is one of the more conservative networks, but they've been awesome. So when the show was first announced, because it's dating and it's season one is all straight people having a go at me saying, why aren't there any gay people on the show?
As if
straight people aren't allowed to date anymore
and
no longer date now that the yes vote has gone through. I'm like, no, they still date as well. Yeah. They can still have their lives. And also ignoring the fact that they have a very gay host. So that box is kind of ticked. But yeah, it's been fun.
I mean, I'll admit when you told me about it, instantly when I think dating show, I think Bachelor, that kind of thing, which is not my...
No, not
like there's a place for it, but it's not my bag. You know? But having watched it, what I like is it sort of turned that whole thing on its head. It's making fun of itself.
It's a gag. Yeah,
it's a gag.
Yeah.
You host it really well.
Thanks.
And you're so fucking gay. I have known you for a very long time and I've been very proud of many things you've done. The proudest I've ever been is when you got your first gay man to host a TV show on commercial television on Channel 7, and within the first 6 minutes you'd made a water sports gag.
I did too. Yeah. There's a lot of innuendo on that show.
Yeah.
And the girls are really funny as well. And the girls are properly funny.
Yeah.
And the thing is, we would love to change it up. I mean, I'm hoping it gets renewed so we can do a gay version because we would love to.
Well, they've done one on the British
and it's done really well. And they've done a Cougars version, which is apparently hilarious.
Heaven,
they've done lots of different versions. And people are also thinking that we're ignoring certain, you know, groups. But we would love to do a gay version, but first season's just 8 eps and the girls stay. Yeah.
I would say it's one of the more diverse dating shows on Australian television.
Oh my God, the girls are every walk of life.
I'm interested to know what process goes into interviewing those girls, because normally when you see people chatting on shows where they're not media trained, they're really awkward and embarrassing, but these girls are quite funny.
I don't know. I think with those sort of reality shows that they do a mental health test with everyone, and if you fail, you're on the show.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I think that's how it works.
That's how you got your career.
Well, when I did I'm a Celebrity Get Me Out of Here, I had a 3-hour psych and then had to answer, I probably had spent a whole day answering all these questions. It was maybe like a 50-page document. Probably failed it, and they're like, great, let's get him.
Yeah.
When I tried to get on Survivor, I actually sent a letter from my psych about how fucked up my childhood was.
Yeah.
Oh, they would love that.
Yeah, straight in.
Who died? And we want to
exactly,
know.
Exactly. Yeah. And then put a little note saying, look, I'm crazy enough to start shit, but not too crazy that I would stab someone on an island.
Yeah, great. That's the perfect
and
crazy.
I think that's how they get people on
the show.
Was
that the original Survivor or the Revival Survivor?
Revival Survivor.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Mm. Yeah.
With a lot of Puglia.
Was the original, I was going to say, you were Asian and that was 90s white Australia.
I positioned myself as a triple minority so they could get two more white people on.
Oh, and it's Channel 10. They would love that. They would love that.
But it wasn't my time.
If Channel 10 could have like a gypsy hosting the project, they would. Like, that is one box they have not ticked yet.
Now, you and I have been friends for a long time. When we first became friends, I had more Twitter followers than you.
That's obviously changed
quite a lot.
Yeah.
As you know, continue to rise, do you sort of feel a bit of pressure to represent the LGBTI community? And do you find yourself getting called a role model a lot because you're in the public eye?
Well, I get caught because members of the gay community go, oh, he doesn't ever mention us yet. Then I get told by other members of the gay community, oh, he embarrasses us and he's too gay.
Yeah.
So I'm in this weird middle ground where I can't seem to please everyone. But I feel like going on, you know, talk show appearances and just talking about relationships in my life are kind of, you know.
That is progression.
But honestly, truly, I've actually addressed it on stage. The second I mention the word gay on stage or anything like, or boyfriend, I immediately get labelled gay comedian Joel Creasy, which is like, you know, the second Hughesy mentions his wife, you know, go, oh, heterosexual comedian Dave Hughes. So it's
I
a weird.
Do call him.
I mean, he is the head of heterosexual comedians.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't think if people, I get a lot of young people asking me for advice for coming out, and I had a very easy coming out. So I'm probably not the best person to ask, but I give whatever advice I can.
Yeah. Mm. Going to your shows, I'm always blown away by how much
should I manage to make up?
That. But how many of my jokes you steal?
a lot.
No, it's not an Adam Richard show. No, I'm always really happy and blown away by the amount of like suburban or rural Australians that are probably not exposed to gay culture that come to your show and are not at all flustered by the fact that you're talking about sucking dick on stage. Or, you know, all that sort of stuff.
End of my show.
Really achieving, you're kicking goals for it.
I don't know. Yeah, it's weird. I don't have many gay people come to my shows. at all. I think I'm like not cool in the gay community. Well,
it's probably because
I
can see you at Poof Doof every weekend.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've slept with most of them. So yeah, but no, I just did Darwin Festival, which is an amazing festival. And I had the coolest, most weird, different crowd up there, and they were great. I was performing outside. It was fun.
It's funny, like tying into, we talked before about the gay online community, which is like notoriously harsh. And
oh my God.
Tricky to navigate, but it just popped into my head before I like knew about this show, before I knew Tom. I actually saw a post, I think a friend had shared it, that you had written, I think before Pride, about like body dysmorphia.
Oh yeah, it was, yeah, before Mardi Gras.
It was the first time I kind of saw you, to be completely honest, in a different light of like,
oh, yeah,
this is someone who actually does have a lot of viewpoints on the LGBT community and is a really important person for us to have.
I know, I thought that post was important to do before Mardi Gras, particularly because I also host it as well. I live in that, I'm in my 20s. I go to places like Poof Doofers and go to all those younger parties where I guess, you know, there is a bit of body shaming going on. I'm in a weird middle ground between the host of the SBS broadcast of people watching at home and the person that does go to those filthy, but fun parties. So I thought I needed to say something because I know people that starve themselves before Mardi Gras. And I saw some douchebag who was only hate following anyway on Instagram in about October with a picture of a donut with a red cross through it, can't have it, shredding for Mardi Gras. Yeah. And I was like, just eat the donut. That would be the most interesting thing you do this week. Yeah. Night one of Take Me Out a couple of weeks ago, the first tweet I got from someone was, you've never looked fatter. Like, boom, like the second the show went to air. Yeah. It's like, great, thank you.
I'm sorry I said that.
I know, yeah. It was good. It was to the point, and I've remembered it.
Yeah. Now, when you were young, and you talked about this in your book, but also you talk about a lot on stage, when you were young, you were obsessed with Joan Rivers.
Oh my God, she's the best.
And idolized her, and she's one of the big reasons you got into comedy.
Well, I got internet in my room when I was 15.
Yeah.
I had a laptop that I'd saved up from working at McDonald's.
Yeah.
And I was stayed up one night watching YouTube. I hadn't discovered porn yet. And was watching, I got in a YouTube black hole on just Joan Rivers talk show appearances and stayed up all night until I had to go to school the next morning. And I was sitting in English class the next day and I was like, I'm going to be a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
I really relate to that 75-year-old woman with all the plastic surgery in America. Yeah. Whereas most boys around me were like, I really like Leighton Hewitt.
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah.
I think Joan Rivers is fabulous.
And who lasted longer.
Exactly.
So like one of my fondest memories of like your career is we were in New York and you opened for Joan.
Yeah.
And it was just before she went into the surgery that she died from.
Yeah, she was just having vocal
surgery.
I got
to see it from the stage.
Yeah.
Backstage.
Yeah.
Joan Rivers.
She was amazing. Yeah. You wouldn't remember. Like, she was so modest.
Yeah.
So chill. I think the most rock and roll thing about her was no matter where she was, no matter what arena she was playing, you know, she's beloved worldwide and also despised worldwide. Like, but, you know, she was an icon. No matter where she was, her rider demands. And I've seen some insane rider demands, like backstage at the Arias from artists with, you know, like one top 10 Australian single.
Yes. Thank you, Casey Donovan.
Yeah. Joan Rivers' rider demand was a prawn cocktail and a glass of house red.
Oh,
beautiful. And like, so old school as well.
Muriel Heslop. Yeah. So cute.
And she'd sit backstage dunking her little prawn into the Thousand Island dress and be like, Kate Blanchett, she's a whore. Tell me about her. Tell me about her. She's a whore, right? I'm like, I don't know her, Joan, but yeah, sure. She's a whore.
Did you get to talk to her about how you idolized her when you were younger? Or
yeah, I totally cool spoke to her about, yeah, I freaked out at meeting her. And she also just spoke to me like a peer, which she didn't have to. And I also, if she hadn't spoken to me like a peer, I still would have idolized her. But she said things like,
she chose you for that gig, didn't she?
Yeah, she watched me online. Yeah. And she was like, stand up. Well, you know what it's like. And, you know, and she actually asked me, I can never remember it, it kills me. She asked me for advice on a joke that she's going to do that night. And I'm certain she didn't require the advice and it was an old joke she was doing, but she wanted make for special. And I was like, well, Joan, what I would do, and I probably gave her the word, I probably like killed the joke for her, but yeah, she was so sweet.
You don't have to answer this question if you want, but do you want to tell everyone what she said about Josh Thomas? Or
well, no.
You don't have, we
she
can
said,
cut that question.
She did say she was like, who's that little shit I met from Australia? And I was like, oh, who could it be? Like, little shit. And she was like clicking on stage to a manager off stage, like, who is it? And then obviously the manager yells out the name, and then she turns to the crowd, she's, oh, Josh Thomas. So my day, week, month was made.
Life, yeah, career.
Yeah, thank you for having me stay at your house, Josh Thomas. Last time I was in LA a couple of weeks ago.
I'm sure he's good at other things.
Yeah, we will tag in the post when this goes out. Now, you actually mentioned you host Mardi Gras coverage here in Australia, which is basically gay Christmas for us.
Mm.
But you also do Eurovision.
Oh, yeah, that is gay Christmas for Europe.
Like our gay Hanukkah.
Is that gay Easter?
Yeah, like our other gay holiday. In our community, do you see yourself as some sort of like Santa figure, some kind of...
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. If you bump into me at a nightclub, I'm certainly Santa.
He'll certainly give you a little present.
A lot of people hate that I have both of those jobs, so maybe I'm conceived more as a devil.
Josh Thomas, yeah.
Yeah. I don't actually know which one's gayer either, Mardi Gras or Eurovision. They are both so...
They're pretty gay.
Gay. Eurovision is hilarious. Just the people from around the world.
Tell us about the dramas from the last Eurovision.
Oh, my God.
You're there with Mith Warhurst, the amazing...
Yeah, human Shazam.
Yeah.
We replaced Julie Zemira and Sam Pang, who we loved as well. We didn't kill them like the Australian public, well, you know, like tweeting us.
Yeah.
They resigned. And I love them. And night one, we were really nervous because the pressure was on to deliver a great commentary. And we got to our commentary box and we're like walking past like Graham Norton in the UK commentary box.
Yeah.
It's very cool. He's a few doors down. And
I think people forget that there's like 50 boxes.
43 countries. Yeah. Plus a lot of countries like America broadcast.
Yeah, so they've got these tiny little like shipping container sized boxes.
Yeah, it's tiny. It's like 3 meters by 1 meter. Yeah. Tiny little. And ours is one of the bigger ones because we have two hosts. And I could see a box in the distance, a commentary box. I mean, like, up above, 20,000 people. The show's half an hour till it starts. I could see all these people jam-packed into one of the commentary boxes, yelling, and a lot of people with headphones and holding cables. It's like, oh, God, please don't let that be the Australian commentary box. And, of course, it was. This is in Ukraine. And we got there, and we're like, hey, what's going on? And they're like, we can't contact Australia.
Oh,
and
yeah,
I said, fucking what? And they said, yeah, we can't contact Australia. And I went, what do you mean? Are you like, have you paid the phone bill? What do you mean you can't?
Well, our internet's pretty shit.
So it could be the NBN. Sounds like the NBN.
I know. But we're like, we do TV crosses from war zones. You can't, the biggest song competition in the world, get a line to Australia. And they go, well, do you want to try? And I said, yes, I do. So I'm in there.
You worked at McDonald's. You had some real life experience.
I've got to plug things in. And then Miff came in about 5 minutes and she said, Joel, get out, babe, get out. So it's like a couple of minutes till we're meant to be on air, and we said to everyone, just get out, and we're just gonna have to do the broadcast and hope Australia can hear us. There's nothing we can do. So we go to air, the show starts, there's this act on stage singing Ukrainian, and I'm like, good morning Australia, good evening Europe, and hello Miff. And then as I go to say something else, some Ukrainian technician starts screaming down our headsets, Australia, turn your commentary box on, turn your... And because our headset is, our microphone is connected to the headset, we can't take it off. But we also can't say, we have turned it on, asshole, because we're not sure if Australia can hear us.
They just kept talking.
So we just had to ignore the screaming. And I'm like, Miff, you look lovely this evening. And then Australia suddenly wakes up, and this technician at SBS in Sydney goes, Australia, have you tried turning your commentary box on? So we've got one yelling in one ear, one yelling in the other. We're trying to host the show. And I'm like, I've pressed every fucking button in here. Like, I've pressed every button so hard, I've almost pushed it through to the Austrian commentary box. And anyway, it was just a nightmare. And people are tweeting us, being like, oh, Miff and Joel are so bad, they've already been pulled off air. And all that crap. It was a very, very stressful
evening. Yeah. Meanwhile, I'm at like the Peel at 7 o'clock in the morning, fucked off my face, getting text messages from Joel saying we don't know how to turn the commentary box.
Yeah,
on.
It's a nightmare.
Do you know what to do?
But it bonded Miff and I because we went back to her hotel room and had a beer and a Xanax and kind of like fell asleep in each other's arms on her bed. So we are good friends.
I'm sorry I brought it up.
Well, speaking of people that get angry, you've mentioned once that you came at the age of 16. Your teachers and school principal didn't react very well, but since you've started gaining more public notoriety, they've asked you back to speak with students, which you've a request that you've ignored. Is that satisfying for you?
It is satisfying. They were like just so jerky. And also, I went to a private boys' school. I graduated in 2007, which is not that long ago. I was out to the other students who did not have a problem with it. Since, I reckon, of maybe 140 in my year, 20 at least are out and gay. Not a single mention of the words gay or anything in sex ed or any sort of gay relationship
while you're at school
school at all. I didn't know anything. I didn't know. It kind of blows my mind that, you know, a school that caters for all boys didn't provide us any education on that front. So yeah, I'm not a fan of the school. Yeah.
Also, they've got money. They can fly you over if they really want to look after you.
Well, we sent them some insane quote when they asked me to speak, and I was like, well, if they say no, I just look like I'm really killing it, even though I wouldn't normally charge so much. And if they say yes, I'm fucking loaded.
See, that's how I know when Joel doesn't want to come to one of my drinks, because I just get like a bill for
getting an invoice or a call from my manager.
I look forward to that email.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's funny because I always think about gay education because I think it's so important to our community.
Totally.
Absolutely.
We're at the stage where that is what is tripping us up. We all come into this community as like blind babies. Mm-hmm. We don't get taught anything in our
school. We
didn't
get to hold hands and all that sort of stuff that everyone in school does.
Social, what do they call it? Like social science or what? Social environment, class. Don't teach you anything about gay history or LGBT history. So when we finally come out and come into the community, we're empty. We have no knowledge, whereas...
Yeah, completely.
And so I think standing up for that in schools and not bending over and just being
absolutely.
Like, what, is so important.
Yeah, at my school, in the one and only sex ed class that we had, which was run by our RA teacher.
Great.
We
who'd
were
know
told,
better.
Yeah, who would know better. We were told if two men have sex, they get AIDS, not HIV. And if one of them is HIV positive. It was a Catholic all-boys school. And we were told if two men have sex, you get AIDS. And I was leaving with my best friend. So we both thought that we had AIDS for like 6 months until we actually learned about it.
Yeah.
And during the marriage equality debate, I wrote to my school saying, hey, this is the experience I had.
Oh,
and I hope
you.
That you're not still treating kids the way that they are. And they actually wrote back a really nice message and said, look, we still uphold the Christian values, but we've had, you know, the last few years, boys bring boys to the formal and that sort of stuff, which
that's
was
pretty
nice.
Progressive.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
See, my school have never reached out to me yet. They'll happily use my face on arts department marketing, yeah. which my legal team have spotted.
I love that schools now have arts department marketing.
I know,
we just had the newsletter
school,
that the receptionist had to photocopy and put in your school back.
Well, you know, I was the editor-in-chief of our student paper.
Oh, really?
And it was a one-sided black and white piece of paper that went around whenever the editor-in-chief felt like it. Yet under my rule, we became a 50-page glossy full spread magazine. We even did a September issue.
Yeah.
With a completely black cover, because that was the colour of our blazers, with a W gold.
Oh,
because I rebranded it to the Wesley Inquirer when I was in charge. And completely sucked the school dry of black ink during those completely black covers.
Not to make it a little dark.
Let's go dark. Well, we've gone dark.
The last Australian TV personality we had that I interviewed was actually a heterosexual man. Mm. So I couldn't really ask him this question. Being so prominent in the industry, and obviously we're touching on it with our upbringing, but homophobia is a thing that's very real, is still present in 2018, unfortunately. What does that look like for you, being in the public eye, being in, you know, the industry, working with, you know, typically conservative companies as well?
It can get you when you're not feeling like, when you, I don't know, like I probably would have gotten one while I've been sitting here talking to you guys. I get probably like 6-7 poorly spelt homophobic, you know, tweets or inboxes a day. Actually, they're normally inboxes because people are very spineless. But I don't know.
They slide into your DMs.
Absolutely,
homophobic.
Kill yourself. And you're like, oh, okay, come on. You got to do better than that. Yeah. But I was chased out of a town of Colac in Victoria, which I've spoken about many times, but I was chased out of a town by homophobic assholes, 5 years ago. So that was a fun experience.
Well, yeah, you know, I was going to actually ask you about that because you did, you know, you've had a few public feuds. Vance Joy Russell Crowe was my favourite.
Yes.
With the, what are they called? The little
hoverboard thing. Yes, they were the original Samsung Galaxy Note 7.
But this one was probably the most poignant because it was a very homophobic attack that happened to you. And then you went back to Colac with Reese Nicholson.
Yeah, so I've been there 3 times. First time I went there, someone said something homophobic to me at a signing. I was unknown and I didn't care. Actually, someone goes, I don't normally like gays, but you're funny. And I'm just like, whatever, that's just a really, you're just not got a great education. And then a reporter heard it, printed an article in the paper being like, Joel Creasy gets abused at gig in Colac. So then I get invited back to Colac to host an anti-homophobia event to prove that Colac isn't homophobic. But then the irony was that there were 20 people waiting outside to bottle me.
Oh, because they'd read that article.
So 20 people to say, hey, we're not homophobic, but we're going to bottle you because you're a homo. So that was fun. Chased my car. It was quite scary. Like, I was shaking, crying. Still had found time to tweet about it. And so that kind of blew up.
Yeah.
And then I went back a few years later to do a documentary about Colac called Gay Crashes with Reese Nicholson, about to discover whether Colac is homophobic or not. And look, I have not been back there in maybe 4 years, but spoiler alert, at the time, still very homophobic.
Yeah.
With a small ABC film crew, you can't pick up people who are spineless driving past really quickly yelling out, faggots. We can't pick that up with 2 cameramen and a 1 sound guy. Like,
yeah.
You know, of course, everyone we spoke to on the documentary was pretty cool with it because they were on camera and had to sign a release form, but all the stuff in the background was just ridiculous.
It's interesting because Colac was one of the top, it was number 11 of regions of Australia to vote yes within the
Oh, really? Oh, that's podium. Good news.
But I think that that is like, poignant.
Get Joel to leave us alone now.
It's either that or you fixed it.
Well, the first time when I was actually properly chased out, there was a lot of obviously focus on the town, and the mayor went on radio and made it worse because he goes, well, it's not like he, you know, got a knife stuck in him or something. And they were like, what? What?
That would have been better.
But then when we went back and filmed the documentary, there was this new mayor there called Lynn Russell, and she was pretty hip and she was very white.
But I think it sort of points out, like, which is something I've said a few times in this podcast, rural people in Australia, 99% are fucking lovely, welcoming people.
Totally.
Who are probably the people that are voting yes in the campaign. Yeah. It's also, though, that rural areas are where you've got your most isolated people that feel like they have to express their opinions about how much they hate everybody.
Well, yeah,
as well,
completely.
Well, which is a very small percentage of the rural.
That's my only homophobic story on touring, and I've toured every small, tiny town in Australia and played stages that aren't stages, and pool tables, and stood on bales of hay. And I've never people go, "Oh, so what's your worst heckle?" I don't get them, and I've never had homophobic heckles. It's just not a thing that's happened to me.
Well, you didn't get heckled by straight people, but I've. when we hang out with our friends, you get heckled a little bit. Now you are in the first healthy relationship I've seen. You're dating the gorgeous Jack Stratton Smith.
Yeah.
Beautiful model. You're a very handsome man, but he's
a supermodel. Fucking
stunning, gorgeous, tall. Is that hard?
It's really hard. It's actually the biggest knock to my ego because we'll go to restaurants and I'll be like, that table are going to come over for a photo. No, they're just staring at Jack because he really, every room he walks into, people are quiet. He's actually quite breathtaking.
And your ex-boyfriends, they've all been lovely, talented people, but
they've all been
this
comedians.
Is the first time you've dated someone more attractive.
We're going to have a few tags in this episode.
Yeah, he's amazing. He's also really nice.
Yeah.
I'm not normally attracted to nice people.
Yeah.
I've got all my friends are fabulous, but I wouldn't really describe any of them as nice.
Fuck you.
But you know what I mean?
The funny thing is, you know me, I never really get along very well with muscle, merry, beautiful, stunning guy. I ignore them and go for the fat old queen in the corner that's singing Sound of Music. But with Jack, love him. He's a beautiful person.
Yeah, he's the best. And he's super supportive.
Yeah.
Whenever I buy, a lot of the labels I will wear for work, he has modeled them in the catalogue, which kills me because I never look as good as him. Or if I buy new clothes, I'll say, can I please wear them first and then you can have it after? Because otherwise, it never looks the same.
Yeah. One of the funny things about Joel's boyfriend, Jack, is one of his first ever modelling gigs was, there's t-shirts where you can get something printed.
Redbubble. Redbubble?
Oh, absolutely.
And you can have whatever you want printed. He is the model on that, one of the models on that website. So when you can upload any image and it gives you a sample of the image. So he'll get friends will see something pop up about, this Nazi American pro-Trump rally happened and they're selling t-shirts to promote their thing. It'll pop up with a picture of Joel's boyfriend
With Make America Great Again.
With a swastika on it because that's what happens when you put it into the website.
Yeah. You know you've made it when the Nazis get you.
Yeah,
I know.
Exactly. Really big time. Yeah.
Everywhere I go, Jack gets so much attention and people, we fly together all the time. I fly every day. I'm a top level frequent flyer and it's my one joy in life because I've worked so hard for that status and we'll sit on the plane and Jack with no airline status will get complete, the flight attendants will bend over backwards for him and do whatever they can. And last row of economy, they'll bring him down like a business class meal. I'm like, what? Why are you doing this to me? I fly every day. So I go to Montreal, the one place I think, no one's going to mention him here. He wasn't with me, traveling with me either. I was there to film a Netflix special. I was feeling very up myself. And I open the gift bag at the Just for Last, most prestigious comedy festival in the world, and pull out a flyer for some comedy t-shirt company. I don't even know what the company was, but it was Jack from the bloody Redbubble sign. And I thought, oh my God, I wonder how many gay comedians in Montreal are jerking off over him tonight.
Well, I guess speaking of gay comedians, back in the day, the black and white days when Tom and I were kids, we didn't really have many gay comedians or actual LGBT comedians.
Certainly not hosting.
But now, we've talked about Nanette and Hannah Gadsby. Reese Nicholson is constantly in some sort of promoted Facebook post in my feed.
Yeah.
Tom Ballard. We've got quite a range of openly gay, outspoken as well, LGBT comedians. Mm. Is there like a crew of gay comedians?
We used to be very close, all of us. And then we used to have a thing called, what do we call, Gay Sundays or something really basic. And then and we used to be really close. And then I ended up sleeping one of them and kind of ruined it for all of us. We asked.
Just to be clear, not one of those three that you just
mentioned. Yeah, but if you could let us know so we could tag them in the post. Absolutely.
Actually, you could do with a tag.
And it's quite nice. Like, I had dinner with Reese the other night, and it's kind of nice to talk to someone who's gone through the industry in the same way you have as a young gay person. But we were all in the same little kind of like wave of people to come through. And I can't
it is interesting because when you think of gay comedians on Australian television prior to that bubble of you, Josh, who we make fun of but adore, Ballard, Reese Nicholson, Nathan Valvo, Hannah Gadsby, that sort of thing, there was sort of like a big wave. Prior to that, it was on television, really sort of Adam Richard and Scott Brennan, and they had to fight hard just to sort of be the sidekick or get an occasional appearance.
Yeah.
Whereas now...
Or they'd be booked as the gay person doing the gossip or whatever. Yeah.
Now, you filmed your comedy special in Montreal, as we said, recently for Netflix.
Yes.
Do you sort of think it's sort of like every or especially gay Australian comedian's goal to make their own Netflix special now?
Well, I think it's weird. Like, it's now like Netflix is the greatest honor amongst comedians, and it's not been around that long. But I keep saying in interviews, oh, it's been a dream my whole life to be on Netflix. And then I realize Netflix has not been that popular. Yes. Look, Hannah's show I saw live, loved, watched it on Netflix, loved it. I get asked a lot about Hannah because I will be the next Australian comedian on Netflix. I'll be the next gay comedian on Netflix. And there's a lot of pressure. And I guess, though, they've chosen me because I couldn't be further from what Hannah does. Mm. And I always say at the start of my stand-up shows, look, if you're coming to learn something, I don't do political comedy. I don't do any of that. I don't do highbrow comedy. It's not how I roll. If anything, you'll leave dumber, but we'll have a good time. Mm. So I can't do that thoughtful comedy like Hannah does. So I guess that's why they've chosen me. But it is nice because there is a focus on Australian comedy. So thank you, Hannah.
What I am really excited about when I saw that they announced you, Hannah, and Nazim getting Netflix specials. Mm-hmm. You know, Hannah is a lesbian, you're a gay man, and Nazim is a Muslim Australian.
Yeah.
We're talking about, you know, what the comedy scene looked like 20 years ago, that is a huge change from the people that were getting through to commercial television.
We are we're very diverse.
Yeah.
Look at all Australia's, that's what I always think, look at all Australia's Eurovision acts. I mean, that is, you know, we are, Eurovision is the poster child for diversity.
Yeah.
I think that's
a feather in your bone. You should be a little bit...
I'm excited. I'm looking forward to people. I'm also looking forward to seeing it dubbed in different languages.
And if
they're going to use someone as nasal voiced as me.
Do you get paid per country for what it goes to?
I wish.
Oh, damn.
I wish.
I'm not good with saying thank you to people. I wasn't.
Neither am I.
I wasn't.
Or apologising.
I wasn't raised right. But I'd like to say thank you for coming on our show.
You're very welcome. I'm loving the podcast.
It is good fun, isn't it?
Yeah. Who's the Samantha?
thank you, my darling.
Pleasure.
All right. Thank you for listening, everyone.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you as well to Joel Creasy for joining us.
Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us. We'll love you forever. Thank you in advance.
And of course, you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Gays Revolting. And you can always join our Facebook group if you want to suggest some topics.
Or just send us personal DMs.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
We love it.
They're hilarious.
Make more memes of Kyle.
Yeah, we love
what,
the memes.
Specifically me? Why? I thought we all had... Wait, is there another one I didn't know about?
Yeah. It's so lovely seeing you all again. So nice. Love hanging out.
Bye,
guys.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.